Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to the Inside Carolina Podcast. It is Saturday morning, but on Thanksgiving weekend, that means it's the day after, sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com. With the day after podcast comes Buck Sanders, Jason Staples. I am your host, Tommy Ashley. We are again sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt. NC State 34-30. Buck Sanders, we talked a bit off air. I've watched a lot. I don't know if I've seen one quite like that, especially not in the NC State North Carolina rivalry. What a game on Friday night, Carter Finley Stadium.
Well, you know, the crazy finishes to UNC NC State games is not a thing. I mean there've been plenty of them, is what I'm trying to say there. The TA McClendon stop, you know, on inches and goal or fourth and inches or whatever. The Gio Bernard punt return. There's all been all kinds of crazy finishes to NC State games with UNC for over the years, plenty of times. It's one I'm trying to remember now that was in the 80s. You may remember it, Tommy. The NC State's always claimed that there was interference in the end zone. Which one was that? It was been a while ago. Like
that was Fuzzy Lee on Mark Thomas. Yep. Carolina won 30-28.
Yeah. So – there's been a lot of crazy finishes to games between these two teams. This one had its own flavor to it for a lot of different reasons, but craziness is no stranger to UNC NC State games.
Definitely that, and especially with it being a rivalry. Jason, your overall thoughts before we dig into it. I thought Carolina, up until about 2 minutes and 12 seconds, had played their best two and a half quarters, because the first quarter was not good. I thought they were doing everything right. Your overall take, and then let's get into this.
Overall take is it took some special it's even hard to give an overall take to what we just saw. It takes some special mistakes and errors, a comedy of errors, a tragic comedy of errors, all in a row for that outcome to happen. I mean, the implausibility of each of those things happening and then happening in sequence. I mean, they just drew a straight flush an inside straight flush on the last card. I mean, it's just, you just don't expect.
And they only kept three cards.
Yeah. Yeah. And that kind of sequence is just, that's my take is, wow.
Only in this game, and only with Carolina football, when it's actually not, it's happened to other teams, but not the way this one shook out. But let's talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly like we've always done. And I'm going to start with the good. Sam Howell is just a beast. I mean, that dude was getting pounded all night. Absolute beast. And he's not the only one that came to play on the offense. But let's talk about Sam for a minute. I was there, and I haven't rewatched it. But to see him wheel that team to be up nine, here's the crazy thing. Sam Howell got Carolina up nine with 2 minutes left. He comes back in with a minute left, and they're down four. The man did all he could to win the game. What'd you see, Buck?
Well, the good, we could talk about that in the context of Sam Howell, but let's lead with this. North Carolina rushed for 297 yards to NC State's 113. Ask 100 people if they'd have rushed for 297, outrushed NC State, nearly tripled their rushing output, who would have won that game? 99.5% of them would have said in UNC, right?
If maybe 99.6%. Is that what you're saying?
Something like that, yeah. 297 yards rushing. British Brooks, where's he been all my life? He looked like Javonte Williams out there. Ty Chandler had a great run late in the fourth quarter, I think, to get him down to the red zone, which – if we're going to talk about ugly, we could talk about red zone. That's been a problem for so long, and it doesn't seem – nothing works for them. And they try the same play like three or four times in a row, and whether it's a run or a pass, and – it never works. Well, it does sometimes work, obviously.
Well, they had the one good sequence down there where they had set it up with the stuff against Wofford, and they had the little naked boot that wound up for a touchdown. You got to give them credit on that one, but the rest of it was an abomination.
Well, you know, like last week, they ran four plays from like the 2 yard line or less against Wofford, and couldn't get in. This week, they get the 5 yard line and they decide to throw it three times. And British Brooks is averaging 10 yards a carry at that point. What are we doing? What are we doing here? I don't know.
Now, granted, they did have, the thing is, as frustrated as I am at those sequences, they did have a wide receiver get his hands on the football on two of those three plays. I mean, should have been catches in the end zone. The one, Buck, you and I tend both to not make a fuss over officiating. But on the one, it was a clear interference that was missed. Still got to make the catch, but it's a clear interference that was missed. And then, you know, a drop on top of that where, you know, he gets hit and you've just got to be stronger through the catch point. And then the other DB made a great play to get his hands through the ball. But you're in position on both of those to score a touchdown.
Yeah,
the one that the play that I just don't understand is running a slip screen down there in that situation, which should have gone for a pick six. If that hadn't been dropped, that's a pick six.
Yes,
that would have been Virginia.
I don't understand
96.
That call. I don't understand that call in that situation at all. I cannot stand wide receiver jailbreaker slip screens in tight like that. You just can't do it.
Buck, that would have been Virginia 1996.
Yes, it would. Yes, it would. And I would not be on this podcast because I would be unable to talk about the game for 2 weeks. that's how I was after Virginia. But a variety of things were ugly. And you mentioned the drops and whatever for that one receiver who will go, his name will go unspoken.
And a guy who had not dropped a ball all season.
7 targets, 1 catch. 7 targets, 1 reception,
4 drops.
Go figure.
He hadn't dropped a ball all season coming in. Just really, it's one he'll want to forget.
Just a brutal knock.
But you know that there are other things that were there's so many positives really. And Jason, I watched the game plan on the beat combination thing. Totally called it when he said that they were going to put more pressure on Devin Leary than they had put on anybody all year, and they sacked him 6 times. Clearly, they left him to be very uncomfortable, except inexplicably there, in the last 26 seconds or whatever it was. And the DBs did, the corners did a great job on those big receivers all game until that 26-second sequence. It's just hard to fathom the number of things that had to go wrong in order for UNC to lose that game or go right for NC State. You know,
you haven't even brought up the onside kick where you've got a guy in position to potentially catch the kick and run it back for a touchdown. He just has to catch it. It's right at him. And he's right there running right through the catch point. Just grab the ball at the 8-yard mark, but he dives over it for inexplicably. So were my eyes deceiving me, or was he actually trying to avoid hitting the ball there?
Looks like he was trying to avoid it. Yeah. Like he didn't know that he could touch the ball before it went 10 yards.
Yeah. I mean, if
the offense can't, but he can't, you know, right?
Yeah. You want the offense to, if you're the defense, but if you're the defense, what you tell these guys is if you have a shot at catching it and it's at the 5-yard mark, the 7-yard mark, it doesn't matter. If you can go get it and you know you can catch it, you take it.
Yep.
And oh my goodness. I mean, I saw him take off there. It's like, all right, he just jumped over the ball. Yeah. What did he just do?
Grayson Atkins. There was a 50-yarder. Well, NC State fans are going absolutely nuts. He's hit 25% of those kicks this year. He's gone. He was gone 1 for 4 on anything 50 yards and above all season. He's only hit one 51-yarder all year. But he nails it. It was close.
With a half yard to spare.
Yeah, it was close, but he made it. If North Carolina wins that game, then I probably gonna have a photo of Grayson Atkins kicking that field goal. But that's gonna get lost in the fog of time now.
Which is totally unjust. Cause I mean, that guy that was a serious, serious deal for them to pull through in that situation.
And they gave up 7 points to start the game. There's another piece of ugly to talk about.
As a former special teams coach, special teams coordinator, this game was a tough one to watch.
I suspect. So, I mean, you know, what are you going to do? It was just a comedy, really, of errors. Nobody's laughing hard this morning, I can tell you, on the Tar Pit Premium message board. But, you know, that's what it was. I mean, so many things had to go exactly right. They had to thread the needle to come out with a win, and they did.
They Grayson Atkins will forever go down as the Marcus Page three-pointer against Nova that people will always talk about, but it's kind of like Jeff Capel's shot against Carolina and another basketball reference in Cameron. It was a heck of a shot. Didn't win. Wasn't for the winner. And Carolina, like you said, Jason, and this is where I want to get in. And I started to talk about Sam Howell earlier. I mean, we already know what he does, and he did it again. So we'll just let that one be. And British Brooks, wow. I mean, Buck, to your point, just he looked like Javonte out there, just trucking guys and running. And to not get it down inside the 5-yard line there at all. But, Jason, let's talk about the special teams errors and the game management. I think they called a timeout before they kicked a field goal earlier in the half and still kicked the field goal and – You just eat. I mean, so many, like Buck says, a comedy of errors. And on that third phase of the game, when you're going out for an onside kick, you mentioned it earlier. You tell the guy to get it. How does that happen? I mean, where do we put it? Do we put it on the coaching staff, or do we put it on players just make mistakes and players have boneheads? I think it's some of both, but I think it ultimately has got to fall on the coaches, right?
Well, everything always at the end of the day, I mean, yeah, it's a player thing, but yeah, it's also a coaching thing. I mean, that's the way that these things are not zero sum, right? It's 100% on the coaches and 100% on the players. I mean, it's not a situation where, you know, it's a small portion of each. You got a senior who has to know better, has to, right? That's on the senior. But at the same point, it's on the coaching staff and on prior coaching staffs and on, you know, everybody involved for not having everybody exactly ready to do that. I mean, that's why you spend all that time on those particular sequences. I mean, I ran that same onside kick concept myself, and we used to run it in practice. We ran it a few times each year, just because you had to get both sides ready for it. Like, look, you have to catch it this way. Like, you have to attack this way. When he does, you know, if this is how this is going to happen, you have to be ready. And you have to make sure that your whole team that might be on that hands team is prepared for that. But then you've got to also, on the sideline, you've got to emphasize your coaching points, that this is, you know, if they do this, if they line up this way, you've got to make sure you attack it this way. All sorts of different things. But at the end of the day, it's also then on the player to make the right call. And, you know, there are a few situations like this where you look at it and you're like, the player just made a bad call. I mean, you call a cover three, and yes, I know it looked like a cover two, but they actually had three deep players on that, on the on both Emezi touchdowns at the end. And what they're trying to do is let the corner beat him up at the line of scrimmage, and then you got a safety over top, and the safety's going to take any vertical. On the one, you know, safety jumps a dig route that he has no business looking at, and you get a long touchdown. And then on the other one, he actually plays his responsibility and just gets mossed. I mean, he's there to make that interception, and that interception closes the game, right? I mean, if he gets his, I mean, that's how close this game was. He got his hands on the game winning interception. He just got it taken away from him. And as a coach, you go, you know, we spend all this time making sure that, you know, deeper than the deepest, but player gets eye candy, jumps the eye candy, and then you're in trouble, right? At the same point, you've got to coach that out of guys. So who's it on? It's on the player. It's on the coaching staff. It's on everybody. And there's nobody that's innocent there. And, you know, as far as I could tell, those were good calls. You know, I went back and I looked at the defensive calls each time, and it's like, well, that's, you know, that's a safe call. That's what you call in that situation. But it's also your job to make sure that guy's ready to make it, to handle his responsibility, Hasek, and knows that he's not. What's that?
The Hasek.
Yeah. You got to know that
late hit that it called on the Hasek was.
I didn't think it was late at all.
It wasn't late.
I mean, I
watched that. Only got rid of the ball like 2 nanoseconds before he got hit. But
I don't think it was out before he got hit. I thought he was getting hit as it left his hand.
Pretty much.
Maybe you could still frame it, and maybe you're right. Maybe it's nanoseconds before, but I mean, that is the definition of a hit on the throw. And he wasn't high. He wasn't, you know, it was right in the strike zone. That is a legal hit, but you know, I'm not going to get into the officiating side of this. I already saw one game this year where NC State got away with multiple pass interference penalties. And I got to see if that's the same officiating crew actually that did both games. Cause whatever, there were some similarities. It was like, man, what in the world is going on? But yeah, you look at that. Now that one, that's not on the players. That's not on the coaches. You got a guy that's doing exactly what he's coached to do. He's getting pressure on the quarterback. You know, that one's not on them, but everything else, you've got to have your guy ready to make the right play on the right call. And they had the right call. And in the one case, he did everything he could to make the right play and just got beat. In the other one, he made a mental error that you can't have. You got to coach out of a guy. So there's no easy solution there. I will say this was one of the best. This was the second game in a row where the defense played awfully well. I mean, if you stop the game at the 58 minute mark, you're like, man, the defense has finally turned a corner. And then you look at that 13 points in the fourth quarter in 26 seconds and you go, well, I guess that corner still hasn't been turned.
Yep. Carolina, the defense had given up. What did they give up total? They gave up 110 on the last two drives in the last 30 seconds of the game. But prior to that, they had given up
250.
Yeah.
So they,
which is, I mean, that's a dominant performance of 14 points and 250 yards given up in a game. That's dominant. That's exactly what you ask for. And then 110 in the last two drives.
Yeah. And just wow. Meltdowns by upperclassmen. And it's just, it's mind blowing. I don't really know what else, if there's anything else to say. I mean, Buck, this article is going to be entitled Microcosmic Meltdown, because this game, more than any game I can recall, was a complete microcosm of the, at least the season thus far. And you could almost say of Mac Brown's 3 years in Carolina. Is that fair? Or is that overboard?
Yeah, I wouldn't say so. I mean, there for a while, really for most of all of 2019 and most of 2020, Sam Howell was bulletproof in the fourth quarter. You know, he led the nation in touchdown passes thrown in the fourth quarter. The comebacks in the fourth quarter were just legendary there for at least a year and a half. So, yeah, they had not really, until this year, made any kind of shown any kind of tendency to melt down in the fourth quarter. That hasn't really been a thing under Mac Brown, but lately it has. I mean, in some recent games, especially last night, obviously, but which was a most serious example you can have of that. I mean, it reminds me of some of the games that have gone down in like almost video meme history. What was it? LSU and Georgia. Who was it a couple of years ago? And
LSU, Kentucky had the Kentucky had them six. Beat, and then yeah. You got a ton of games. But
yeah, it'll be like that. I mean, that's the one they'll show 20 years from now on ACCN highlights.
Oh yeah. And the question I have, and it's sort of in jest, is who has more fans in North Carolina today, Wake Forest or Boston College? As that game kicks off at noon, of course, NC State goes to the championship game if Wake Forest stumbles against Boston College. Jason, how do you build off this? I think the key building blocks are the defense. I mean, it's tough to talk about the defense when you give up 13 points in 20 seconds. But, you know, I do think the defense made if it happens once, it's a one-off. If it happens twice, you're starting to get a trend. Now it's happened three times where they've played pretty well overall, save a few catastrophic
and against good
mistakes.
Quarterbacks.
Yeah, so how does Bateman build off this and keep his guys on that trend upward?
Well, I think the first thing is that you do emphasize to your guys, like, look, we played well. Guys, we did our jobs. See what happens when you do your jobs? Look what happens when you play physical, when you're doing your responsibility, when you're tackling in space, when you're, you know, not falling prey to eye candy. Can be a pretty good defense if you just do what we're asking you to do. We played well, guys. I'm proud of you for how we played for 59 minutes of this game. I just want to emphasize that. And I'm gutted and I hurt for all of you for this, for the way that this game ended. But again, I'm just going to say, look, if we just do our jobs on these last couple things, it takes finishing. You've got to learn to finish. And if we can just learn to finish and make sure that that our eyes are great, that we're always doing our job, look how good we can be and look what happens when we're off by just a little bit.
You know, I think we also ought to mention, we talked about this in a previous podcast, but you know, football being a team sport, you don't really look at one particular player, unless it's a quarterback, as a real, you know, difference maker too often. But Storm Duck made a tremendous amount of difference at corner. Had he been healthy all year, I think we'd be talking about a different win-loss record for the Tar Heels. And, you know, not putting it on injury, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to make excuses. But when he came back, he made a heck of a difference at corner. One player made a lot of difference.
I agree with that. I mean, he locked up State's other receiver. He had locked up both of them until the very end. Jason, offensively, Carolina rushed for almost 300 yards against the NC State defensive front that had some injuries but had been playing really well. Where are the positives out of that performance? You know, the way I look at it, the positives were great. The negatives, of course, ultimately helped lose the game, but the positives probably aren't going to be around next year, at least from this one instance. So what'd you see from the offense?
Well, I mean, aside from my frustration with how short yardage and tight zone stuff is handled, Phil Longo can really run an offense between the 20s, right? They know how to find space and create open opportunities for receivers. You still have Josh Downs coming back next year, right? You still have a lot of pieces as you look forward. I mean, Antoine Green is going to want to spend a season coming back from this performance, given how he had played. I mean, he'd really turned a corner in the second half of the season and it played great. And he's still a guy that got open multiple times and beat, you know, he was beating guys down the field. And, you know, in a couple cases, drawing what in almost any other game would have been a pass interference on multiple cases. Just didn't finish. You have Olsen making an excellent catch on the goal line on the fade there. So you've got pieces that you can go, okay, look, you learned how to fight here, or you learned how you can get real close, but you've got to finish. Those are all positives. As for the rest of it, I mean, next year is going to be a whole different offense. So, I mean, there are positives. There's not a whole lot that you can look at and be like, well, we can build here, because you're rebuilding a lot on offense next year. You're trying to figure out who you're going to be and all that. And I still want to see this staff change philosophy a little bit on their short yardage stuff. I mean, for one, I'm very much persuaded that what you do, if it's a, you know, third and one, fourth and one, as often as not, the quarterback sneak is the most underused play in those situations. And, you know, I've learned this as much from watching Tom Brady over the years as anybody. You know, you get him in 1 yard to go situations, and how often does he just, you know, do the whole little goose thing, you know, and finds the gap, and you learn to do that. There are ways of not overcomplicating some of that stuff that I want to see, but you wanted positives. I think the positives are that you feel like you've got some receivers going into next year that can win downfield matchups. You just have to learn to finish a little bit. You plug in a quarterback that can play, and I think they've got two young guys that can play, and you know, you can find a pretty good identity on offense next year. So even with a lot of the pieces leaving, so you know, maybe British Brooks still has a super senior year, right? So I mean, who knows? But running back
shouldn't be their problem next year, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think it will be. they've got some dudes who are coming in, and you know, one dude I like Hood a lot, you know, in terms of his potential as well. So I mean, they've got, you know, they're gonna have three or four guys next year that can play at that position. So, you know, they find some other solutions, and you know, they advance at quarterback like they should with the young guys, and they'll be fine. But defensively, I think that we did see them turn a corner in the second half of the season. They just have to learn to finish, and you know, that's the next step. So it's I still can't believe what I watched. And what did I do? I mean, in terms of angering the football gods to be covering, you know, the Florida State Jacksonville State game this year, and then the UNC NC State game this year. I mean, something about improbable snatching of defeat from the jaws of victory kind of situations. I've watched some of this stuff up close and personal this year, and I'm still just blown away by what this game, what happens at times in this game.
I was thinking about Florida State, Jacksonville State ending there when Carolina had the ball with one last gasp to get it done. Buck, so let's turn it off the offense, off the defense, and on to Mac Brown. And I want your thoughts on this guy. This season has got to cause, and this ending here in the regular season has got to cause some serious, serious self-reflection. I know that they say they do that all the time. They're always evaluating. But a lot of these issues that we've talked about on this podcast that Carolina fan base have seen are just recurring after happening again, and there it is again. What does Mac Brown do in this offseason or in this period here leading up to whatever bowl game they play and beyond to get those recurring devastating things that consistently happen to not happen next season?
There's several points to be made here. And I think to start with, one thing that Mac does not do is he does not disappoint his boosters, and he does not lose to NC State or did not in the second half of his 1.0 tenure. I think he won five straight or so, maybe seven. I don't know. It was a few. And so he's done that now. And another thing about Mac is that if you go back through his history as a head coach, he's never been reluctant to fire assistant coaches. He fired Manny Diaz like on the field against basically after the BYU game. He is not one that some people might get the idea that, he loves his particular coaches and he won't let them go because he personally likes them. That's not Mac. Mac is worried about his legacy and his win-loss record. He's not concerning himself with friendship over the record book. So, I would expect that there might be some coaching changes in the offseason. We'll see. If Mac doesn't reshuffle his staff to some degree, and by reshuffle, I mean shuffle some out, some in, it would be out of character for him. I think it's safe to say that. So we'll see what happens.
All right, boys. No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I was about to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I just think losing to NC State the way they lost to NC State is a game changer for the fan base. I mean, it's one thing to go and lay.
Oh, it is. And I was going to make that point too, that what's happened with the UNC fan base now is that Mac has created a lot of skeptics where there weren't skeptics before. People were bought in. They were all about Mac. He's the man. He'll get us back to the promised land. All he had to do is stand in front of crowds and say, trust me. And he got the benefit of the doubt. And he deserved the benefit of the doubt when he came to UNC. He's got more wins than everybody except Nick Saban is coaching actively. So he's won a few ball games in his life. He's been coaching long enough to know how it's done. But he's going to make some changes. I'm pretty sure about that, in part because he's lost a little bit of the goodwill he's come in with. And with fans, that might not matter too much, but Mac probably has the best relationship with UNC boosters of anybody in the history of UNC football, better than anybody I've ever known. Certainly better than people like Dick Crum and to some extent, Jim Dooley. He's going to want to rectify that because he's depending upon his ability to connect with the powers that be over there, including boosters, to get a lot of the toys that he wants to play with. So there's that piece of it. But for, as for the fans, now he just can't go somewhere and say, trust me, I got this. I know what I'm doing. Don't worry about it. And have everybody applaud and say, okay. People are going to be looking at him under a microscope a little bit more often than they have in the past 3 years. Put it that way.
I agree with that, certainly. And if folks watching this or listening to this have read the Tar Pit Premium message boards, yes, I agree with those sentiments wholeheartedly. And whether folks like it or not, that encompasses the hardcore Carolina football fans. I mean, friends of ours went to every single road game, 0-6, 0-5, whatever it is on the road. I mean, that you got fans that do that dedication. They, quite frankly, they need some reassurance or they need some results. And just to do it, losing, you know, if Carolina would have lost to NC State the way most of us expected or thought it was possible, then, but to do it in that fashion, just sort of rub salt and oil and grease and cayenne pepper in whatever wounds that Carolina football fans have had over the years. Jason, you got anything to close us out? Because I think we about covered this one.
Well, I thought a David Hale tweet was really interesting last night. I thought it was pretty accurate that he compared current this year's Mack Brown North Carolina team to basically the 2011, 2012. I think he was thinking about 2011, but he said to basically early Jimbo Fisher at Florida State. And I think there's some accuracy there. He said basically a team that has invested fully in recruiting, has brought in a ton of talent, and just hasn't been able to get over the hump and has lost some games against teams that they probably should have beaten. And then he pointed out that, you know, the next year they within a couple of years, they took a major step forward as that talent started to show out. He also observed, though, that Jimbo made a couple of key coaching changes after that 2011 season. So he went out and brought in a couple of other additional guys that were able to make some changes. So some of that was not by choice, though. Some of that was Mark Stoops went and took another job, and he took Elliott with him. So there were some changes with that were needed because guys took other jobs. They were hired away. So it was not a matter of Fisher felt like his staff just wasn't there and he needed to replace those guys. So to be fair, I don't know that the results would have been a whole lot different if they, you know, kept the prior staff. But the point was, it didn't look like they were going to be a dominant team down there. It looked like they were going to just keep underachieving. And like, wow, you know, they're recruiting all this great talent and it sure ain't showing. And then all of a sudden you get that big breakthrough and they become a buzzsaw because the young guys that are the young 4- and 5-star guys that were just not quite good enough to get over the hump in 2011, in 2012, they go 12-2, get real close, still lost at NC State in a real painful one that kept them out of the BCS title game, had a concussion of their quarterback that led to a loss against Florida in that season finale, but really close. And then 2013, suddenly they're untouchable. What the reason I end with this is one of those things where coaches all the time talk about what it takes to build. And you got to remember what Mack Brown took over. How many games had they won in the prior three seasons?
5 in the previous two.
Yeah, 5 in the prior two. So this was a long-term rebuild when he took over, and he let everybody know that. They were ahead of schedule because Howell was so good and they had some other guys that were able to really make a difference early on. And, you know, this was a team this year that is a team. They still got one more game. This is a team that has been on the cusp of really making that difference. I mean, this was a game where they dominated really most of the game. Lose close, win big. And
as long as they keep turning that talent over, the results start to change. So I still think that you know, look, I've been the first to criticize on certain things, and there were some, I think, serious mistakes made coaching wise in this game, from special teams to game management to certain calls that I thought could have been better. But overall, this team has grown over the course of the year, and you're starting to see some of that young talent flash, and they're going to be adding that much more of it this next year. As this talent gets a year older, they're going to get better. And, you know, Mac knows that. He knows what he's got on the roster. And, you know, I think it'll be really interesting to see where that goes next year. I mean, obviously they're going to have to reload on that offensive side, but they're reloading with talent. So I think that's a good comparison overall. I don't think they've brought in quite as much talent as Jimbo did initially, but they're in that same kind of building discussion where they're going to be that those results are going to show. It just lags a couple of years because these guys have to grow.
Jason Staples closing us with that big four-letter word called hope. Good way to end this one. Carolina falls at NC State in epic fashion, but as Jason says and Buck's talked about, there is hope. You just got to search sometimes and find it, and you got to wait on it. Carolina 6-6. I guess we'll find out what bowl game next week or after the ACC championship game. I would suspect it's Charlotte. That would be fun against South Carolina or Tennessee or somebody like that. At any rate, Johnny T-Shirt has sponsored this podcast, and don't forget to support them. You get 10% off your everyday order if you're an Inside Carolina Premium subscriber, and they're great friends. And, of course, they've got a ton of Christmas deals for you to take care of the Carolina fan.
Probably got some Cyber Monday stuff going on sale, too, I would guess.
Yeah, if you're not on their email chain, get on it, and then you've got the Inside Carolina discount on top of that. So great stuff from them. Rate, review, subscribe, like, however you get your podcasts and your YouTube feeds. Buck Sanders, Santa Claus Sanders, Jason Staples, our last day after podcast until whatever bowl game it is, probably in late December. But boys, it's always been a pleasure. It's been so fun. Even though they're not always fun to talk about, it's always fun to get together with you guys. Thanks.
Yeah, if I don't get to talk to the IC Nation between now and Christmas, Merry Christmas, everybody. That's the reason I got my hat on. And same to you guys, too. But we'll be talking between now and then.
Yep. Thanks.
And happy Advent, everybody.
We'll talk to everybody soon.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.